Hello, everyone. My name is Benedetta Legranzi. I'm the internal lead of the Global Patient Safety Challenge program, Clean Care is Safer Care at WHO. And I'm very pleased to introduce today the second free WHO teleclass on infection control held through Weber training. I'm really pleased, actually, to introduce my dear colleague, Hugo Sachs, who has collaborated with us over the last 5-6 years. He's a consulting physician in infectious diseases and infection control and assistant professor in infection control at the University of Geneva Hospitals. He is a clinical doctor with a lot of frontline clinical experience, but in particular, he has great interest in system dynamics, behavior science, and human factors. And this interest actually has pushed him to go in depth into the concept of hand hygiene indications to actually identify a new approach, which is now well known worldwide. This approach is called My Five Moments for Hand Hygiene. It is a concept which is promoted by WHO. Today, he will help us understanding further this concept. I would like to remind all of you that part of the content of his presentation is also published as a scientific background in one paper in particular published in the Journal of Hospital Infection in 2007. As well as I would like to remind you that this concept is also applied into the method that WHO promotes for hand hygiene direct observation. Similarly, there is a paper to highlight the scientific background of this method published in the American Journal of Infection Control in 2009. So I let the floor to Hugo Sachs to present on hand hygiene education and monitoring, returning to the WHO My Five Moments concept. Thank you very much, Hugo, for your presentation.
Thanks a lot for this very nice introduction, Benedetta. And everybody has to know that you were involved in creating this Five Moments. So hello to everybody. I hope everybody is well. And I'm really excited to be given this opportunity to talk about my Five Moments concept, this user-centered approach to the when of hand hygiene. In this lecture, I will try to explain the mechanics and the challenges that we faced while designing the concept, show some of the trade-offs and why we decided to go this way or another. It is unfortunate that we cannot have a discussion in the end together, but there would be too much background noise to make this possible. And I like to tell you, however, that there is the possibility to send an email about your thoughts and questions to the following email address. In the first slide at the bottom, you see the homepage name of webertraining.com and the email where you can send your comments or questions is called info, I-N-F-O at webertraining.com. So I'll try my best to answer them all. Let's jump to the second slide, and I might point out that I numbered them on the left upper corner to make sure that we are in sync. Sometimes I will refer to that. And the first slide is called the Hand Hygiene Mystery Divide. Originally, at least in our hospital, there was a list of single tasks that needed hand hygiene, care tasks. It said, for example, on that list, manipulating a central venous line you should use hand hygiene before manipulating a central venous line, or after touching a bloodstained material, or after glove use, before glove use. And hand hygiene can be seen in that way as part of care protocols. This is one way to see it, to look at the all care protocols and make sure that hand hygiene is in there at the right moment. The problem with this is you end up with a lot of hand hygiene indications. And being very specific, the problem is that they are limited to specific settings that you have to know in advance and very well when writing the protocol. This is a limit of this approach. It is specific and not universal. And care is too complex to be covered by protocols to 100%. Then there is another problem with having a complex system. There is a risk. It might create what I would like to call a mystery divide. A complex system calls for expert. Expertise is required to know about all the details or to judge the risk of bacterial transmission in each care situation on the spot, spontaneously. And where there are experts, there are also non-experts. So imagine yourself being a healthcare worker, caring for a patient, being observed for your hand hygiene, not having a very solid idea when exactly you should apply hand hygiene. You think you're good in care, you're proud of your profession, and you give your best. You find solutions every time there is a problem with a patient, and you do hand hygiene as you think it is best. But then you're observed, and you feel that somebody else knows more about your own hand hygiene than yourself. And in the end, you're given a compliance rate, and you're not exactly sure how you should translate this into a better hand hygiene. It would be better if everybody knew exactly what the rules are, that there is no doubt, no ambiguity left in the system. There is no divide between the infection control experts and the frontline healthcare workers. So the healthcare workers really own their hand hygiene, and that their knowledge is congruent with the knowledge of experts. And what is also important is that senior professionals who are not working at the bedside every day anymore know the rules as well, because they are simple and anonymous and can advocate for them when they are at the bedside with other collaborators and tell them what to do and intervene and say where hand hygiene was missed or was done well. So everybody is clear what the good thing to do is. Let's go to the next slide, number 3. The Swiss hand hygiene campaign was probably the first nationwide campaign to use hand hygiene monitoring as a quantitative performance indicator on such a large scale in 116 hospitals at the same time. That was back in 2006. So there was really the need to come up with a robust rules, so everybody of the 400 or so observers had the same idea about when exactly it was required to perform hand hygiene. This was a challenge because there were so many different ideas. And they were not only ideas. At the time, I did a little experiment in a meeting. I showed to a public of 30 or so infection control specialists a 7-minute video of a real care situation. Every one of them had to count the opportunities for hand hygiene in the video and come up with a percentage of hand hygiene compliance of the physician, the main character in that video. The outcome was a big surprise to everyone, me included. The compliance of the physician on a mean was judged about 50%, but what was astonishing was that the different ICs, infection control specialists in the public, came up with a compliance that ranged for this physician between 20% and 80%. So having this variable outcome between experts that should teach people hand hygiene, that was not good enough. So in this meeting, I reviewed with the public the CDC guidelines on hand hygiene that existed at the time and showed the video again. So the range was a bit smaller, about 30 to 70%, but it was still not good enough. And so I thought that was not a good situation to go into a national campaign, and there was an urgent need for a standardization. Now, the question was how to standardize something so various and complex as patients' care, with all the interruption, the different objects that you touch, different surfaces, patients, wounds, infusion, devices during a whole workday. And as this slide shows, you have on the left the 70 indications in different scarce situations, and we had to transform them in something more simple on the right side, like five moments for hand hygiene, five indications. So next slide, four design specifications for a new hand hygiene concept were that it must be simple. And I put you a nice reference at the bottom of this slide about simplicity and the value of this. Then it had to be intuitive, drawing on the natural impulses to perform hand hygiene that people already have, what is now called intrinsic hand hygiene behavior. And then it should be robust, it should be applicable to a wide variety of situations, different healthcare situations. And then something that goes against this divide, this mystery divide of hand hygiene, healthcare workers should more or less easily become observers, because when everybody is clear of when hand hygiene should happen, they should also be able to judge it when they look at somebody else performing hand hygiene or not. And the concept finally should be useful for different purposes, monitoring, teaching, training, and reporting of hand hygiene. Now, next slide. Even if the system is very good and very easy to learn and robust to apply, it should also be effective on the outcomes we want to prevent, the negative outcomes, the infectious outcomes. So it should be microbiologically effective. And by being that, it should be based on evidence, on scientific evidence. But it should also be economic, in the sense that you don't want to waste people's time by doing too much hand hygiene. It should just be as much as needed. And when you take the three together, you come up with the idea of targeting risks, targeting infectious risks. And this, I have to say, has been difficult and still is. The problem is we have only a relatively vague idea how and when exactly the single bacterial transmission happens, when the crime happens that ends up in an undesired infectious outcomes. Germs remain invisible, and infectious outcomes manifest themselves distant in time, distance to a transmission. Think of colonization with a multi-drug resistance that never shows up, or think of an HIV infection in a healthcare worker that becomes manifest much later in time. Next slide. So we went to use a transmission model, and the first question is, what is the outcome to prevent it? And let's jump directly to the next slide, where I changed this phrase to the question, what are the outcomes to be prevented? Because there are two outcomes to be prevented, and I would like to distinguish the two. There is a publication about the transmission model that might be of interest to you, shown on at the bottom of the slide. Next slide, the transmission model. I would like to submit to you this concept of how these negative outcomes come about based on what we know about infectious diseases. So on the left, you have the reservoir, an accumulation of microorganisms that are of interest in the outcome in healthcare. And in healthcare settings, these are most of all the patients, but also the environment in a larger sense, and maybe the healthcare workers. And then from this reservoir, microorganisms have to be transmitted to other patients. They have to be transported from the reservoir to individuals to end up either in a colonization or, and this is shown in the next slide, number 9, in an infection. An infection being symptomatic by symptoms, fever, swelling, all of the immune response symptoms. Next slide. If a transmission of microorganisms to a person ends up by colonization or infectious, is a question of a balance between the virulence of the microorganisms, the quantity of the microorganisms, and the host defenses. So either the germ is very virulent, then and the immune system or the immune defense is very weak, and then it ends up in infection. Otherwise, it's first a colonization. And slide number 11. There is also a pathway from colonization in a later time to infection when there is a transmission maybe within the patient to a more critical site where the patient can then on a second time get infected. And the next slide, again, this depends on an equilibrium or a balance between the virulence and numbers of microorganisms present and the host defenses. And this equilibrium depends largely on the quality of care. It depends on what we do with patients, how we do it, and when we try to fight their primary disease. It depends, for example, on the central vascular line that we decide to insert, how to insert it, and when to take it out. It depends on antibiotics given to the patient that could break their natural protective flora. And it depends on tranquilizers, for example, that you might give the patient, ending up in bronchial aspiration and pneumonia. All of this is very important for the risk of acquiring healthcare-associated infections and quite complex. But it is also true and important that each time you see the word transmission on this slide and the curved arrow, there is also a transmission needed to establish the negative infectious outcome. And each time, your hands may play an important role as a vector that transmits the microorganisms, either from a patient to another patient, or from the environment to a patient, or from the patient himself to a critical body site, where it will end up infecting the patients, for example, in a central vascular line. Next slide, number 13. So we distinguish these two negative outcomes, colonization and infection. Colonization much more frequent as an outcome, and infection either directly, which is quite rare because it needs very virulent pathogens or very immunodeficient patients, or indirectly, which is more frequent via a colonization, and that would be the negative outcome number two. Next slide, again, we have these two outcomes that we want to prevent: colonization with multi-resistant pathogens and healthcare and so associated infections. Now let's jump to the slide number 15, and this is an empty slide. And this slide is here for you to use your imagination. I'd like you to take a minute and imagine what your hands do during a day, where they go, what they touch. Imagine a little sequence of hand to surface exposures, what you touched in a row, at least in the last hour or so. Your face, another hand, a keyboard, a patient, a doorknob, a patient again, your face again, and so on and so forth. We don't remember this very well, but in observations that we did, the interval between two hand-to-surface exposure during care can be measured in seconds rather than in longer periods. There are probably thousands and thousands of such events of hand-to-surface exposure each day in a row for each person. Now imagine that each time you touch a surface, be it the fomites, or a living body, your hands depose a certain number of microorganisms to the touch surface and at the same time pick up a certain number of germs. Deposing them, these germs again on next time you touch a surface. That's how it goes. Without being visible, without making any noise, your hands will permanently dislocate germs from one surface to another, from one spot to another, from one patient to another, and so on. The next slide, number 16, shows a very interesting experiment in a clinical care setting that shows very well how hands transmit pathogens throughout the healthcare setting. You see the reference at the bottom, and this is in a neonatal ICU, intensive care unit, and they used, you see here a geographical display of this unit with at the top you see different pods for patients, and you see non-patient areas like the nursing station or the resident MD charting area. You also see the number of positive screenings they did, and they used DNA for this, DNA of a virus called cauliflower virus. Probably used this virus because it's not naturally existing in a neonatal ICU environment. And what they did, they put it on a telephone receiver in pod D that is marked in red, and then observed with screening of this DNA at different spots throughout this ICU. And this is the next slide, shows you the result. It, on top, on the middle, you see the initial pod where they put the DNA on the telephone receiver, and you see their screening results on the right side of the slide. The time is plotted in hours, and they checked it at time 0, and hour 4, 8, 24, 48, and after 7 days. And you see in the initial pod, it spread very rapidly all over the room and started to decline after 2 days. But astonishingly, it spread also over pods with a few hours already, within a few hours already, but in a lower degree on the left side of the slides. And even more surprisingly, it spread to the non-care areas very quickly and heavily, what you see on the right bottom of the slide. For example, in the nursing station, in the charting area of the physicians, in the break room, and even in the locker room. Now, this is only a model, but it shows very well how efficient hands are as a vector to distribute pathogens from one single spot all over the place. So let's jump to the next slide, which is number 18. And let's think this through in respect of our two negative infectious outcomes, colonization and infection. And transmission, as we understood now, is happening constantly. But is it always of importance? No, it isn't. Transmitting microorganisms from one door handle to another does not infect patients. So we have to distinguish transmission moments of risk with risk of those with no risk. And from one door handle to another would be a sequence of hand-to-surface exposures that would not have an infectious risk immediately. When we jump to the next line, number 19, touching a door handle and then the patient, there is a risk of getting one of the two negative outcomes because you can transmit, for example, a multi-resistant microorganism from a door handle to a patient, which could end up with colonizing the patient with that multi-resistant pathogen. So it is a risk, this transmission, and we want to avoid it. So this would be a good moment for hand hygiene. It would be an opportunity for hand hygiene. How big is this risk in each single case of touching a door handle and then a patient? We don't know. Probably it is low for each single such event. But since we don't know when the bad things happen, we have to take this into account and declare it as a risk each single time we do this transfer of our hands between a doorknob and a patient. This is a bit like a security belt and car accidents. When we enter a car, the risk of having an accident is very low. But we still put on the safety belt just to make sure. If we would know when exactly the car accident would happen, we would not go into the car in the first place. We wouldn't even use the safety belt. We would just stay off. So we don't know. The risk is low. And to lower the risk further, we use the safety belt. And this is more or less the same thing like this situation. Now let's go to the next slide. So we understand that by transmitting multi-resistant pathogens from the environment, in the hospital environment where we don't know where they are, to the patient would be the negative outcome colonization. Next slide, 21. Another situation touching the patient at two different spots of the intact skin or clothing would not represent the risk to colonize the patients because the flora is the same on the patient, and just putting it on another spot of the intact skin would not end up in infection or colonization. But next slide, 22, touching the patient and then access his or her central vascular line, opening it and touching it, could end up in infecting the patients, because then the pathogens could enter the body and be at the spot where the immune defense would not readily deal with it, because the skin is not there to defend the patient against these germs. There is a nice publication that I mentioned at the bottom, which shows that a lot of healthcare-associated infections are happening by pathogens that are already present on the patient when the infection happens. So it's not always that you bring in the germ and the patient gets infected right away. It's rather that the patient has flora on the patient himself, and then this flora is brought to a critical site and it will enter the body and create an infection. So next slide, 23, we retain that this is the other situation where I have a negative outcome and the infection. And put this all together in slide 24, you can differentiate three different zones and two, the negative outcomes, infectious outcomes, the healthcare zone that is around the patient, then the patient zone that involves the patient's intact skin and his immediate or her immediate environment, and then the critical body sites like lesions, mucous membranes, or invasive devices that represent critical spots where the germs can enter the body and create an infection. So that's the concept, and the next slide just shows this with some pictures to be a bit more obvious. So then we jump to the slide number 26. When you think about the patient flora, and we don't know exactly what this flora is, there are many germs in a patient. One says that it's 1 kilo or more of patient weight are germs, and not only of patients, of everybody. And this flora will also spread to the environment partially. And here you see a graph where I try to depict this graphically. You see the patient in the middle, and probably the flora is more concentrated in the patient, but then it gets dispersed through to the environment, where the colonization load will slowly get lower when you go further away from the patients. So there is at the bottom the distance from the patients in the two sides, and on the left scale you have the amount of patient colonization, and you see the graph and how this is around the patient being here, for example, in a bed. Next slide. So the idea is to draw a sort of a zone around the patient that includes the patient and the close environment. That could be the bedside table, the bed linen, and everything that is around the patient. Also monitors there that are touched by healthcare workers while working with the patient and not using hand hygiene in between. So this is the patient zone. And the next slide, we can distinguish the patient zone that involves the patient flora and the healthcare zone that has a mixed flora of all different kinds. And you see here some pictures of so-called high-touch surfaces where everybody touches and where the flora is certainly very mixed. Next slide. To that we have to add, when we think of the concept I discussed now some minutes ago, we have to add this critical site where germs can enter into the body. And they are symbolized here by an invasive device, being by two invasive devices, one being a sterile device, an infusion that, for example, with a central vascular line that enters the body and the bloodstream directly, but it involves also other critical sites such as mucous membranes or wounds where germs can enter easily and infect the patient. And then there is another device that that symbolizes all the exposure risk to body fluids, like here a drainage that could be a wound drainage or even a urinary catheter. And the symbolization is done in a way that you can see that the gravity, the sterile fluid is going in the patient and the body fluids are coming out of the patient to symbolize the risk of bringing germs into the patient and exposing yourself to body fluids. So let's jump to the next slide. And here I would like to talk actually about the five moments. And about some of the thoughts around the five moments and about some exceptional situation of the five moments. So here there is the first of the five moments before touching a patient, and actually this wording is not absolutely right because it's not about before touching the patient. Actually, it's because it concerns a transmission of microorganisms, you have to have a before and after, and you have here touching the environment, healthcare environment, where you pick up germs that might be multi-resistant or otherwise dangerous for the patient. And then you transfer them onto the patient and his close environment. And this is sort of an in-between between two hand-to-surface exposure and the transmission, the transfer of these germs from one area, from one zone to another. But there is no easy way to word this, and so we call it before touching a patient. But we keep in mind that it is actually an in-between two hand-to-surface exposures, one outside the patient zone and one inside the patient zone. Next slide, number 31. What is the negative outcome we are seeing here? I put the red line around the patient because the outcome of touching a patient on the intact skin with hands that are not clean, not cleaned from the flora that you picked up when touching the healthcare environment, that would be colonization, as you see in the next slide, our negative outcome number one. And the patient gets colonized and the close environment then gets colonized, and if this is, for example, a multi-resistant pathogen like MRSA, then all of a sudden this patient has a multi-resistant flora in this patient's zone, and this becomes a risk for other patients. Next slide. There is a second indication for hand hygiene before clean or aseptic task. I put this very short here, before clean. And this is when you touch the patient somewhere or the patient environment. You pick up germs of the patient and then you bring them at the critical site, and they can enter the body and, as you see in the next slide, end up in an infection. And actually, because you overcome the host defense of this patient and the germs are now inside the patient and create an infection. And this is the negative outcome number two. And the hand hygiene indication or moment number two. Next slide, 35. When you touch body fluid somewhere, or you, there is a risk of having body fluid after such an exposure at the critical site, where this is possible, you have to do hand hygiene, because otherwise you keep germs that are maybe in the blood or other in another body fluid of the patient. You keep them on your hands, and this is dangerous for you, and you don't want to spread them around. So there is an immediate hand hygiene needed after such a task, and you want to do it before you continue to care for the same patient. That's why this arrow is curved and points to go on and care for the same patient. So this is an immediate action needed after this potential body fluid exposure. Then we get in the next slide, 36, to the next fourth indication for hand hygiene after touching a patient. That is when you go away with your hands after having touched the patient or his close environment, and you don't want to carry the germs further away in the healthcare setting by dispersing the germs everywhere in the environment and also put them on yourself, putting yourself at risk. Then we go to the next slide, where we have symbolized that the patient is not there, but actually the patient environment can still harbor the patient's flora. And that's the reminder to tell you the fifth moment for hand hygiene after touching the patient environment. This is typically in clinical setting possible when you walk to a patient and you touch the monitor and then you walk away without touching the patient. You might still have picked up some of the patient's flora from his environment or her environment and carry them along. So you want to do a hand hygiene at that moment. So these are the five moments for hand hygiene. And now in the next slide, that has no number but is 39, I want to discuss two indications in one opportunity. Why do we talk about indications and why do we talk opportunity? This will be clear in a moment in this next slide. So here you have the situation where you come with your hands exposed to the healthcare environment directly. You access a critical body site, for example, a port on an infusion on a central vascular line, without touching the patient. So you have two indications, you have two reasons to do hand hygiene before touching the patient, because you cross the line of the patient zone and walk up to him and touch the patient, but you have another one before clean happening at the same time. So what does that need? What does that mean? Do you have to do twice in a row hand hygiene, once when crossing the line and one again without touching anything else before you access the line? No, you haven't, because you have just one opportunity to do hand hygiene, and they will cover this one hand hygiene action will cover the two reasons to do it before touching a patient and before clean. Next slide. Something else would happen when you first touch the patient somewhere, then you wouldn't want to do a hand hygiene before. You carry on caring for this patient on intact skin, and then immediately before you access the line, you want to do a second hand hygiene that would be before the clean aseptic task, and that would be necessary not to carry the patient's flora into this critical site to get him infected. So these two situations have to be distinguished clearly, that you do the hand hygiene each time immediately before you touch a critical site, before you do a clean or aseptic task. Next slide, something similar happens, two indications and one opportunity. When you go directly from one patient to another, intact skin, but without touching anything else, you should do a hand hygiene after touching a patient and before touching a patient. But when you are clever and you don't touch anything else, but you just walk from one patient to another, for example, taking blood pressure from several patients in a row in a room, then you want to do hand hygiene just once in between the patients. And the opportunity means that you have all the time between leaving one patient and arriving to the other patient. Anywhere in between, you should do your hand hygiene. Next slide, number 44, would show the opposite. When you walk out of a room, you close the door, so you touch the healthcare environment. You want to do before you open the door and after touching a patient opportunity, and then when entering the next room and closing the door before touching the next patient, you have to do the hand hygiene again, because you exposed your hands to the healthcare environment. And again, this is the same situation as the first slide of this series of the 5 moments for hand hygiene. Next slide, an interesting subject, the gloves, where do they fit in? So next slide, when we remember again, before doing a clean or aseptic task is often then followed by an indication of after body fluid, because they often go together. Accessing a line close to a patient will mean that you access a line, so exposing the patients to getting germs into the body, and at the same time you might expose yourself to body fluids. And where do the gloves come in? The gloves come in, as shown in the next slide, 47. They come in just to do this this body fluid exposure risk task, because you don't want to spill a lot of body fluids on your hands. So you do the hand hygiene, you put on the gloves, you do the task, you take them off, dispose them, do hand hygiene, and carry on caring for this patient or the next one. So this is the proper use of gloves to protect your hands against an important exposure to body fluids. Next slide is just a summary slide of these 5 moments for hand hygiene, and it is depicted well in the main picture of the 5 moments that you find on the WHO homepage on this campaign. Let's go to the next slide. That is the slide 49, doesn't have a number and treats yet another case that is very specific. And let's jump to the slide number 50, where you have, in some settings around the world, you have two patients sharing a single patient's zone, because they are so close together that they touch each other. Often they share the same bed or the same spot where they lie down. And so in the next slide, you see that it doesn't make sense to do hand hygiene in between these two people. But when you walk up to such a situation of two patients sharing the same close space, you want to do before patient hand hygiene and then after touching a patient when you leave them. But you still, and this is shown in the next slide, 52, you will still want to do hand hygiene immediately before doing an aseptic or clean task and after a body fluid exposure each time. Next slide. Now we have a scenario with two patients in one room. Next slide, here you see the room with a door on the left, and you see these two patients. And then in the next slide, we will walk through a scenario where a nurse opens the door to a two-bedroom, and then the nurse adjusts the bed cover of patient A, the left patient of the two. Then the nurse accesses a line port of patient A, and then she walks, leaves patient A, and goes directly to patient B without touching anything, and then accesses directly the line port of patient B. And then next slide, 58, you see that the nurse helps patient B to be more comfortable in her bed. So she adjusts the patient and carries on touching the intact skin. And then she leaves this patient and walks across the room in the next slide, and in the next slide 60, she goes out of the room and leaves this two-bedroom. So the next slide shows 61, the indications for hand hygiene as we walk through this scenario. Before touching the patient would be number one. Next slide, 62, before clean, after having touched the patient in another intact skin situation. And then you would have several indications at the same time, actually four at the same time, being after body fluid, because she walks directly from one after body fluid exposure risk situation to a before clean aseptic procedure in the other patient. So there is also an after patient, after touching a patient and before touching a patient in between. So you have four reasons to do hand hygiene. And then there is an after body fluid in the next slide, and there is an after patient in the next slide. And we will jump to the slide number 66. And here you have the opportunities for hand hygiene. And as you remember, several indications, several reasons for doing hand hygiene could go together in one opportunity because they are solved with one hand hygiene action. And here you have five hand hygiene actions. Now, the next slide, 67, shows a typical situation where you have a hand rub distributor at the room entry on the corridor side of the room. And now take a short time, several seconds rather than a minute, to think about what happens to do these five hand hygiene opportunities to be 100% compliant with those when you have this hand drop dispenser at the room entry. And the next slide shows you the walkway of this nurse if she wants to be perfect. So I would call that bad quality hardwired, and you understand very well how you can increase hand hygiene compliance when you actually give the healthcare worker an opportunity to have the hand drop, the alcohol-based hand drop, close to the opportunities for using them, which means close to the spot, the point of care, which is close to either of these two patients, to each of these patients. Now, the next slide, let's quickly talk about adherence, about monitoring hand hygiene, about what it means to be compliant or adherent, how you calculate this. And let's jump to the slide number 70. And here you see a similar situation as we saw before in this room of two patients, now put on a timeline. That is the line you see across, the arrow that you see across from the left to the right is the time that goes on. And you see in black bold lines care activity. And so you see a first action of the nurse is opening the door, touching the doorknob. Then the second action is the adjusting the bed cover of patient A, and then the third bold line is the nurse access the line port of patient A, and then she leaves directly going to patient B, and then here the nurse shakes, and this is the fourth bold line, nurse shakes hand with patient P. So this all takes a certain time, and there are breaks in between when a nurse goes from one patient to the other or from one activity to the other. The next slide shows you now the hand hygiene actions, where the nurse actually does perform hand hygiene. So she does it on the corridor before opening the door, and then she does it when she walks from patient A to patient B. So next slide would show the opportunities. As we saw before, there is an opportunity between the doorknob and adjusting the patient's bed cover, and then there would be an opportunity before clean or aseptic before accessing the line in patient A, and then there would be an opportunity going from one patient to the other. And actually only one of these three opportunities are actually met by hand hygiene action, and so the compliance in the next slide would be 33 only. Now, hand hygiene training, the next slide, and we jump right to the next slide. A good concept is not good enough. Translation into specific environment is necessary. You have to, as a healthcare worker, to train yourself and not only understand the system. And one good thing to do is to define the patient zones involving healthcare workers. This is important in two ways. First, everybody has to be clear what the patient zone is, so this has to be defined in each healthcare setting specifically. And the other good thing about going about this involving healthcare workers is that they really own then the system. They can have their word saying what they think makes sense, which things go into the patient zone, and they have to be cleaned when the patient goes away. And so they are really involved in designing part of the whole system, and this makes them understanding the system more profoundly. And the third point is really training people, so everybody has to, this has to reach a certain amount of automatic behavior, because otherwise it will not work, because the mental load when you treat patients is very high, and you have to try and do hand hygiene in quite an automatic way. Next slide. Here you have the 5 moments for hand hygiene written out. And even if it's only five, there are sometimes not easy to remember. So in the next slide, as a last thing, I submit to you a little memory aid. And this is based on the idea of chunking, which means putting things together to remember them as one thing. And when you look at your hand and you succeed to do this figure, this has a meaning in itself to try to do this. Not everybody can do it on the first try. You have the before and after patient that most people remind very quickly, with reminding that these two fingers remain dry. You have the intact skin as a reminder, and then you have the other two fingers that stand for before clean and after body fluid, and you remember that these two fingers regard something that is fluid or wet, because all the infusions, all the mucous membranes and all the wounds, they involve some fluid. And then you have the thumb representing the after patient environment as the fifth moment. And the next slide even puts the gloves in this whole thing, that you remember when you touch something that involves body fluids, you have to wear gloves, but just for these single tasks. So the next slide is really talking about future research, and this is the slide number 80, evidence for behavior dimension, implications for the design. We have to continue to understand how people work and to make the things even easier. And the evidence for implementation and sustainability is an ongoing research to understand how to change behavior on an organizational level. Another thing would be that I think there is some need to know more about the detail of transmission mechanisms, from how infections and colonizations really happens, when are the risky moments, and we need some more comparative outcome research to know what really helps us to prevent patients from infections in different settings. And different levels of hand hygiene compliance and other determinants of infectious outcomes in healthcare settings. So this brings me to the last slide, and I listed just for you the publications that Benedetta mentioned at the beginning, and I would like to add to these two things, a video that just came out about hand hygiene in the New England Journal of Medicine this year. Actually, it was last week in the edition called Hand Hygiene, Very Simple. And another video, a dance video that people usually like, that you can download at the homepage vigigerm.org. And with that, I would like to thank you very much to listening to this discussion, and I would like to hand over again the floor to Benedetta.
Thanks a lot, Hugo. Really, thank you very much for this very thoughtful presentation. As I said before, Hugo Sachs is really the brain behind the concept of the five moments. I'm very happy that today we had the honor and the opportunity to listen to him and walk us through this concept that from some sides is really quite complex. It requires a lot of attention. And I think that the practical examples, the transmission experiments that you showed really helped us to better understand what it means behind. And hopefully we will all remember these concepts during healthcare delivery in our everyday life. So I really would like to thank you again, Hugo, and to remind people that if they want to submit any questions, this should go through the Weber Training email box for information that Hugo showed at the beginning of the presentation, and also can be found on the website. I would also like to take the opportunity to thank once again Paul Weber for helping us to disseminate our concepts and hosting us on this fantastic tool that is the Weber Training. And finally, I would like to thank you all for listening to us and for putting in practice our concepts in particular, but any best practice in infection control. Thank you very much to everyone, and goodbye.